I acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, and I pay my respects to the elders past and present, and we acknowledge that this always has been and always will be Aboriginal land. So, today I'm going to pass it over to Dr. Ava Parsemain, recently doctored. Is that a word?
Recently, we can make it a word.
Dr. Ava Parsemain, whose PhD was in the educational and pedagogical value of television, and she is a media studies scholar, so she's here to talk to us today about queer identities in empire. Please welcome Ava.
Thanks, Jess. Thanks, Jess, and thanks everyone for coming, and also thanks SSSN for inviting me to Screen Empire today. So before we actually watch the episode, I'm just going to say a quick word on the work I've been doing on this program. So this is actually part of a broader project that looks at how different American entertainment programs try to educate mainstream audiences about queer identities. And so, as Jess mentioned, the core of my research is more, it's about understanding how television educates. So I'm more interested in understanding how TV can function as pedagogy. But today, I'm not going to be talking about the how questions and the pedagogical techniques and so on, or the strategies, but I just want to sort of draw your attention more on what a program like Empire teaches. So not so much pedagogical techniques, but rather the representations and the content. So in their book, Queer TV, Davis and Needham write that television has regularly been configured as a domestic medium and as such closely associated with the home, the family, the quotidian, in other words, the heteronormative. So heteronormativity basically is the belief in a natural alignment between biological sex, gender identity, gender expression, and sexual desire. So it implies that gender conformity and heterosexuality are the only natural norm, and that therefore they're superior to alternative identities that deviate from that alignment. So queerness is a form of sexual alterity, or a form of alterity, that challenges the normative alignment between sex, gender, and sexuality. But what's really important in terms of understanding the concept of queer is that the notion of queer doesn't simply refer to what is not heterosexual. It's, by definition, it's more about fluidity. So queerness refers to a shifting and fluid and dynamic understanding of the self that fundamentally challenges the static and fixed notions or binary conceptions of identity. So there's a quote by Dyer in The Culture of Queers that I find really useful. She's that queer is something you are constitutively rather than something you might do or have done, feel, have felt, mainly, sometimes, once, maybe. It is this latter range and fluidity which goes far beyond another fixing notion, the bisexual, that analytical notions of queer seek to address. So just trying to bring this back to my object of study, which is TV and entertainment TV, especially in the American context. So for a very long time, queers were pretty much invisible on American television. Or when they started to be a bit more visible, they would be depicted in, for the most part, they were depicted in a negative light. So negatively, as victims or deviants or depressed drunks or criminals, pedophiles, killers. So all those stereotypes, all those negative images were dominant on American television. Since the 1990s, LGBT characters and LGBT themes have gained some currency on American television. So queers progressively became more and more visible, and they started being depicted in a more positive way. According to some critics, and particularly in the mainstream media right now, American television has now entered what they call the golden age of queer representation. So since Ellen Morgan, who's played by the comedian Ellen DeGeneres, came out in April 1997, there were many programs that featured LGBT characters as regulars or as leads. And in a sense, today in 2016, seems like queers are everywhere on American television. Okay, so now visibility and presence on the screens, obviously, does not necessarily guarantee progress. So they are more present and they are depicted as, and they become leads and regular characters. But as Joshua Gamson writes, if the invisibility party is over, new questions are still circulating about the new visibility party that has taken its place. So who is invited and by whom and at what price and with what political and social consequences? So despite these recent improvements in terms of representation, some seemingly queer positive texts have been criticized for reinforcing heteronormativity instead of challenging it. So I don't have time to go into the detail, but basically representations of queerness can be problematic for a range of reasons. So it's kind of like there are patterns that occur regularly on television and problems that are recurring sort of throughout time and different genres as well. Scholars identify similar problems that are really sort of recurring. So, for example, when the series perpetuates stereotypes about LGBT identities. And I think that was an issue back a long time ago, but I think it still applies to some text. If you think of, for me, an example that comes to mind would be, I don't know if anyone watches Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, but I think that's a series that has a certain stereotype with the character of Titus. So stereotypes can be an issue. When another problem is when queer sexuality is presented as a narrative problem. So that's when coming out or homophobia presented as they become this major storyline and a source of dramatic tension. And obviously that's the case in Empire. Another issue is when the queer characters are desexualized or when the characters are heterosexualized. And I'm going to explain this a bit more. So, for example, although it was groundbreaking in 1997, the sitcom Ellen first desexualized the lead character. It depicted her sexuality as a narrative problem, so it was a source of dramatic tension. And also it was addressed, like her sexuality was addressed mainly from the hetero perspective of her friends and her family. So so that was an issue with Ellen. Ellen has been really sort of heavily criticized for its representation of lesbian sexuality. Now, even more recent and seemingly progressive texts are also problematic. So, for example, to make queerness seem more mainstream and some even argue more glamorous, so programs like Will and Grace and The L Word really tried to emphasize similarities between straights and queers. And I would say actually between the similarities between the queer characters and the imagined straight audience. So in a sense, that was also to sell those programs that I think producers do that. And so therefore, the series actually avoid confrontational or alternative looks and identities that could actually genuinely threaten gender norms. Okay, so now, what about Empire? So Empire is a very successful musical soap that's currently broadcast on Fox and features, I mean, several queer characters, but one of the main characters, Jamal, he's definitely a likable gay male lead in the series. So he's a famous R&B singer, and he publicly comes out in the first season despite his father's outspoken homophobia. So as a queer, Jamal is problematic for several reasons, I think. The first reason that comes to mind would be that Jamal is not incidentally gay. So his sexuality is presented as an issue. So it's obviously it's a major storyline. He's coming out, the homophobia storyline are major storylines. So for a lot of queer studies scholars, this is actually a problem because basically because it fails to represent queerness as a or queer identities or queer sexuality as just mundane, ongoing and normal part of everyday life. So as something unremarkable, that's just part of life. But that's an argument that is sort of frequent, but I don't actually agree with that argument. So I don't have time to explain why, but I would disagree with this argument. I don't think it's... I think it can be an issue, but it also can be a strength, you know, in, for different reasons. The main issue I actually want to highlight with Empire and its representation of queerness is the heterosexualization of the queer characters. So Jamal, at first, if you try to read Jamal as a queer character, he's actually heterosexualized. So, for example, he displays what some call the attributes of conventional masculinity. So he's handsome, he's muscular, he's physically and mentally strong, he's competitive, he's assertive. So he seems to be consistent with what some call the mainstream tropes of heterosexual masculinity. So in other words, when you look at Jamal, he's sort of kind of like the most women in the L word, in the sense that it does not threaten gender norms and it doesn't look queer. And what I find interesting, if you look at the first season and the gay men in the first season, they all share these heteronormative characteristics. So they all look traditionally, conventionally masculine. Now, there was one character in that season that was coded as queer. So his name is Chase One. He's a famous gay photographer. And Chase One, he's less conventionally handsome. He's less less muscular. He's also more effeminate. So he sort of challenges those gender binaries. And also what's interesting with Chase is that he's polyamorous, explicitly polyamorous, and he explicitly challenges, in the dialogue, heterosexual traditions like marriage and monogamy. Now, his character, Chase, who to me is actually the queerest character in the series, he's also presented clearly as a deviant, and he's clearly presented as an antagonist as well. So he's not a villain, but close to being a villain. So unlike the heterosexualized gay man figures, Chase is corrupt and he's distasteful. So the explicitly queer figure is the sort of negative, negative character. Also, you'll see in the episode that I'm going to show you guys, this actually also applies to the female queer character of Mimi Whiteman, she's coded both as clearly as queer and clearly as a villain as well. Now, this was about the limitations of Empire in terms of representation. And despite these limitations, Empire also, I think, attempts to depict queerness in a more positive and progressive way. So there are some elements, especially if we look at Jamal and his storyline. So Jamal does look conventionally masculine, but he also expresses his gender in an ambiguous way. So he does blend elements of femininity. That's the picture on top is him as a child. He was cross-dressing when he was a child. And so he does blend elements of masculinity and elements of femininity. So his gender expression is sometimes fluid, I would say. So in itself, that makes him queer. And unlike Chase, with Jamal, feminine masculinity is presented as an acceptable and positive alternative to hyper-masculine, so conventional hyper-masculine masculinity of his brother Hakim or his father Lucius, for example. So Jamal is coded as queer in his gender expression, but also in his sexuality. So, and that's what I want to sort of also draw your attention on. So in the second season, and particularly in the episode that we're going to watch, he has a brief romantic and sexual relationship with the female singer Sky Summers, who's played by Alicia Keys. Sorry if I'm spoiling the episode for you guys. But at first it's interesting, because at first obviously this seems to heterosexualize the character. Like you can see on the meme. This storyline is very interesting to me because it definitely challenges heteronormativity. I think because it's used to resist binary, rigid and binary conceptions of sexuality. So you'll see in the episode, Jamal actually, he actually reaffirms his homosexual identity, but his identity just does not preclude him from being with a woman or being attracted to a woman. So through this storyline, the gay character is not, I don't think he's heterosexualized. I think he's just obviously used to explore these notions of sexual fluidity. And his homosexuality is not suppressed, I think, in the text. I think it's reaffirmed, and also I would say that it's actually queerified in a sense. So that was interesting to just look at the reception of this storyline, because it was very criticized a lot for denying bisexuality. That got sort of bad negative feedback. But to me, it's really crucial that he does not adopt this label, and because by rejecting this label and this fixing identity, this fixing label of bisexual, and he's choosing to define himself as a gay man who may engage in sexual relationships with women, in itself is like profoundly queer. And I think it's a more progressive. I actually want to conclude with the idea of tourism. The phrase gay tourism that I've come across is actually used sometimes to refer to heterosexuals who use queer sexuality as an alternative playground without giving up their hegemonic position of heterosexual and their heterosexual social identity. So in a sense, gay tourism is sometimes seen as a form of cultural colonization of the queer other. Now, what's interesting with Jamal's excursion into heterosexuality is that I read it as I read this storyline as a power reversal, in which it's the queer who experiences pleasure and freedom through heterosexual practices while completely maintaining his queer identity. So by visiting heterosexuality as the alternative playground without abandoning his social identity, the queer character actually, to me, regains power over hegemonic heterosexuality. So obviously, like, I focused mostly on Jamal and his sexuality, but before we actually play the episode, I also want to draw attention to what I think is another really important aspect of Empire, which is the issue of race and the issue of fluidity in racial identity. So this notion of almost queer race. And I selected this particular episode because there's a very interesting intersection and an overlap between, the queer identity and this fluid racial identity. So hope you enjoy the episode.
I'm so confused by this world. Because it's a world in which Naomi Campbell doesn't exist. Yeah. Alicia Keys doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But Katy Perry does.
That's so true.
And like Charlemagne does.
World.
Like, there's this weird thing, like, it's a weird transmedia world where...
Why does Nicole Richie exist?
Like, Nicole Richie exists, and the
Jason Derulo exists.
Jason Derulo exists, but the characters perform on the Grammys, but the Grammys don't exist.
But this is so funny to me because so much, like, discussion, like, feminism's so big at the moment in mainstream culture, and so is being queer, but it's always in this really confused, kind of, like, mixed way. So it makes sense that, like, the actual execution of the story was completely confusing and bizarre.
I mean,
it's
not
really consistent.
But that's what happens in Nashville as well, where they have like real country stars, but then they have who they refer to as their real name, but then they have real country stars performing as characters.
Like a character. But see the difference?
Christina Aguilera.
Whether but Alicia Keys, Christina Aguilera in Nashville, or anyone that's like a bit, it's because when they become substantial. Like, as if they become seriously, like, across several episodes, then they become a character. Like, I can't think of a celebrity that play themselves, whether it's Nashville or here, like, but for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Then they become a character.
They can't,
yeah. Like Neo.
Because they can't.
But
yeah, they can't get a storyline.
Right. Yeah. It's always like they make an appearance, but they don't stay as like themselves. Like Nicole Richie, if she'd stay for 10 episodes.
It's a cameo.
Yeah. I think that's
it's a money grab.
Yeah.
So,
totally.
When do you think it's possible for queerness to not be incidental to a character and a narrative and not be problematic?
But
when can it be an issue?
Yeah, well, so this one is, I think, interesting because, yeah, often they say that when the gay character is not incidentally gay, then that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's like, oh, it's
why can't they
assuming,
just,
yeah, it's assuming that it's not acceptable and
like
it's not
deviant
acceptable.
Or it's an exception.
Yeah.
And everyone else is straight and they're not.
For me, especially with Empire, I thought there was a strength because it's raising... It's just showing that it's still an issue. So, like, it's not
right.
yet accepted.
We don't live in a utopia.
Yeah. So, when you... It's really interesting. I think you need both in TV
yeah.
world. Like, you need some representations of incidentally gay characters and you need... You still need to address, like, the fact that homophobia or queerphobia or whatever it is still is a reality.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what... That's really what they wanted to do with Empire. They wanted to say, look... Okay, it's great, all these shows that present gay people as like, you know, there's no homophobia in the world that doesn't exist. It's great, it's good, but we also want to do shows that actually show that, no, it's not
right.
the case everywhere, especially in the other.
Because if you don't represent it, then you
well,
blind
then,
it.
Then you pretend,
yeah.
then, exactly, you show
yeah,
that.
It's your world, yeah.
Yeah, post
so
post
same
post
as
world.
Any representation, it's how
yeah.
you do it.
Yeah.
yeah.
And so,
whether there's mixed representation, it's not just
yeah.
stand-ins.
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah, do you think you do need both across, like, TV and like, it, yeah, you, I can't imagine TV that would be just everybody just
right.
incidentally gay or, yeah.
So how much of a debate is this within queer scholarly circles?
Oh, is it
contested or,
honestly,
seriously?
Honestly, like, the majority, like, there's just an agreement that when it's presented as an issue, it's problematic. But that's the, I haven't read anywhere that they were saying, but you need both arguments. Like, it's not a direct debate. You need
yeah.
both arguments. There are arguments against those shows, like in Girls or Looking, that
mm-hmm.
present gay characters as, oh, we're gay, and it's just whatever.
But those shows are also set in New York and San Francisco.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
hipster
no, and I think
there
should, no,
like,
yeah. should be shows
like that. You know,
like
it's
that.
Not like... Like, I understand why it's an issue in the hip-hop community.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah,
that,
yeah.
but...
Yeah. Yeah, I think
know.
It's the reality. I think it's realistic. That,
it would be like,
yeah.
this week we're going to talk about homophobia on
yeah.
the girls.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah. Not that you do need those characters where that just happen to be gay or queer or whatever they are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you do need that, but, you, yeah, I like that there's some shows
mm-hmm.
that are still saying, well, they're still raising this. I mean, I don't know. Empire has been criticized for being too...
overtly
well,
out.
For raising it as an issue. Yeah.
Like, yeah.
No, but that's the thing. That's the way they do it. I think it's not subtle, and that could
yeah.
be done better. But he's been criticized for just talking about it. Like, what would you even do a homophobia storyline? Like, that's just the thing of the past. It shouldn't.
Right.
Like,
oh.
Which I think is like.
Have you seen Unreal?
Yeah, I love Unreal
because it has a homophobia storyline as well. With
the contestant who's
the contestant who's secretly
yeah.
gay and
yeah. Yeah.
Then and she's worried about her homophobic small southern
that's
town
true,
finding
yeah.
out, so she
yeah.
pretends to be
yeah.
straight.
Yeah, yeah.
And she, you
they
know,
made
she's the show was a beard.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
almost.
That was yeah. That did raise like that issue in a kind of a side storyline,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't. And that wasn't done as like she's incidentally gay. Like that was a major, even though she's a
yeah.
minor character.
And they've got
but
a web series focused on that character.
Oh,
now.
Do they?
Yeah.
yeah.
Oh, that's cool. So what happens is she see like her life after
she, like,
the show.
She moves to LA and
she's like
with
girlfriend
her girlfriend.
And,
like,
is it? Have you watched it? Is it?
I've only watched the first episode.
Okay.
Which is like they find out they've been duped on like Craigslist.
That's
they've paid a bunch of money
it,
for an apartment that
people
doesn't
do
exist.
Unreal. I
want
to watch it. I want to watch it.
Yeah.
But, I think it's more, I compare this more to, for me, Nashville is the point of reference, because I think Nashville
yeah.
and Empire are, like, they're, like, the same show.
Well, in Nashville,
yeah.
it's had the gay character from the beginning, and the
yeah.
way that they
yeah.
negotiate that
there's
tension with
way.
The gay character, in a very similar way,
yeah.
very similar way. And, like, you know, country music is so gay, you know, like, how can, I'm not
so
gay,
straight.
Like, how it's so homophobic, so straight,
yeah.
how can we deal with this, you know,
I mean,
homophobic star, and he... Like, I think, I don't know what episode I'm up to, but he gets approached by, like, an LGBTI
yeah.
Friendly label,
yeah.
and they're like, you know, you would have a huge fan base with blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And he says stuff like, I don't want to be identified as a queer country singer.
Yeah.
I just want to be a country singer. And he rejects their offer of like a
mainstream.
I think it's done. It's interesting.
Yeah, he wants to be with a mainstream label. Like, he doesn't want to be...
Mm.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. But I'd be... Like, what I think is quite problematic is the show... Again, I'm just showing what I watch here.
Mm.
But like a show like The 100, which is conveniently set... 500 years in the future, where it's so, it's like a post-racial society, but it's like post-queer, where any character can be with either gender, and it's just not spoken about, like it's just completely...
It's on niche,
And that, while it's kind of positive in a way, it's also problematic, and there was obviously a huge uproar about the killing of Lexa.
Like that's the whole thing. They did the same thing with Empire, because there was like that the same issue came. The dead lesbian trope thing is like a major thing, but I think like that. I haven't watched The 100, but I think
they do not talk about it, and it's just
like.
One episode, someone will be with a girl, and the next episode they'll be with a boy. Like, it's just completely...
Can you tell us more about your reading of the main characters' relationship with Alicia Keys?
Jamal and Scott?
Yeah.
Well, for me, it was that when that storyline happened, I was like, this is perfect. Like,
For
me, this is the essence of... Like, that's where Empire becomes really...
Interesting
and positive and queer positive, because, as I said, I think that... And then that continued after as well, after this episode. He's just sort of I think it was a genuine connection with her, and they had this genuine relationship, and he had this attraction, and yet he didn't refuse to define himself as bi, but he said like, I'm gay and he said that again and again, and he said that in different episodes as well. And yeah, to me that was the essence of like, that's when it's he's beyond gay or bi or straight. Like, he doesn't the label is not like he affirms that label of being gay and that social identity, but at the same time it's fluid and it's free and it's open, which is, and he really insists on that if you've seen the episode after that, because what's interesting is he's pulled in the directions where his dad wants him to be the straight man, right? He's like, great, you're having sex with a woman, that's amazing, be straight. But then he's also, Jamal gets so much attacks from the gay community. Like, this character, the gay kind of, like...
Jamison.
Yeah, he's like, obviously an antagonist in that, and really pushing Jamal in being just a gay man, does not hook up with women, basically. And then the gay community is, like, represented by other characters later on as well that, like, attack Jamal directly by saying, you're flip-flopping, like, just, like...
That is
not,
such a good scene!
It's the worst scene of Empire ever. It's like the craziest scene where they, like...
There's a flop-flop! There are protesting flap-flops
like,
with flip-flops!
And, like, you're a flip-flop.
They're shaking them at him.
It's just... And so Jamal is there, and he's, like... And he's... throughout the episode, he's just pushing this, and he's, like, no, like... I'm free. I'm a gay man, and I'm free. And he's also really put against the gay community that really wants those narrow identifications. Be a gay man. And they really want him to be this like fixed thing. And he really refuses and he fights against that.
That fluidity is still really unusual on film television.
And they say it like again, being unsettled. They like they say the words like
sexual
fluidity,
gender is really
fluid. Spell it out, but I think they do that because of, I think their audience is, they're not doing the show.
This is interesting. Yeah. Who's the audience? Do you know about the demographic?
It's in the US, it's like African Americans are massive, like is it?
But they don't have a larger African American audience than like most primetime shows.
Do you reckon?
I think larger.
African American women, apparently.
African American women are a large portion of their audience, but they like. African Americans make up like 20% of the audience for Modern Family.
Yeah.
And they make up around 30% of the audience for this.
Yeah.
So it's not, there's not this huge difference.
Yeah.
Like,
but I mean, it's probably not the same as I would say that Modern Family. Like, you know, that Modern Family is like watched by Republicans. And like, I mean, it's not, I don't think it's the same audience.
It's not the same demographic.
Yeah.
But like, it's not, like, there is this perception of Empire as being this show
that
is exclusively watched by black
people.
And you can tell that it's pitched at a very wide and diverse
audience. I think so. Yeah, I think so. International.
It also hasn't travelled well.
No, Australia, yeah. It hasn't done well.
It's done really poorly in Asian markets. It's done really poorly in European markets.
Yeah.
It's done really poorly here.
Yeah.
Like, it's basically...
Did it come to network TV?
Yeah, it was on Channel 10 for 2 or 3 weeks and then it got moved to 11.
But, like, if you're looking at, like, if you're looking at, you know, like, network... numbers of readings of like proper free to air, like that's not going to give you the audience. Like, I feel like young people are watching this, they might not be watching it free to air as well. And like, it's not, I think the indications of like audiences now are kind of tricky. But in terms of, for me, I'm more interested in like, yeah, the how it's talked about, and, you know, on the internet and on Twitter and like all this engagement. And just very, I think it's
very
definitely,
very,
and it's talked about. Like, that's
it's the same as like Scandal.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you've got a large Twitter
base.
Yeah.
It's a particular kind of way to engage, but no, it is interesting. And there's this whole thing I've just noticed with generations as well. Like, I think in Empire, it's like the older people are conservative and the young people are pushing towards, like, with sexuality and race, with, like, the African-American identity. I feel like Lucius and Cookie are very old school black people. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we're African American, and it means this particular fixed performance of being African American. But the younger, like, their children are a bit more fluid in their racial identity as well. And
is that because they have the privilege of class? Because
more than their parents?
Yeah,
definitely connected to that, because they're not working class, and Lucius and Cookie. They're not working class anymore though. Like, they're not.
No.
They haven't. They come from that. So you're right.
But their identity is tied up in
that,
the notion that they are from the street.
Yeah. Yeah. And Hakim does it a little bit as well. But like, I think Hakim is more fluid in his understanding of what it means to be a black man than Lucius. Even though they're still doing that working class thing, like ghetto. Like. But yeah. No. I think that's. I do observe the difference, and you're right, it's totally connected to their background.
I would love to hear what actual African-American people African-American queer people think of.
And also the like homophobic ones. Like, I'm sure Empire were homophobic. Like,
you said at the beginning that you think that Empire has like particular limitations, and I'm just curious as to whether you think those are limitations based on the television program, or it's a melodrama, or like, are they format limitations? Are they generic limitations? Or are they narrative limitations? Like, I guess I'm just curious where you see,
like,
what's the root of those limitations when we're talking about queerness and depictions of queerness?
With Empire, I'm trying to think. Because I base this on the literature, and mostly a lot of it is Ellen and the L Word. And there's an agreement there where it's coming from. Often they say that it comes from the desire, it's almost commercial, like it's this desire to appeal to a mainstream audience, which is both commercial and educational and pedagogical, because they want to sell, like they want to appeal, but at the same time they also want, like, something like the L Word, I think they're trying to also teach, like,
they want to be effective.
They want to, like, they basically, it's like a, you call that the Trojan horse? Like, they I think they want something like the L Word or Will and Grace, or, you know, I think they want to do that to an extent, like, have mainstream, slash, you know, straight
audience
relate to the queers. So to me, that's also educational. And I don't know if it's a similar thing with Empire. Like, I think, I don't know. It's like, for me, the main limitations are like, I mean, Mimi and Chase, like, for me, it's problematic the way they're being depicted as... They're obviously visibly queer, but they're these really deviant people. Like, they do things that are deviant and they're corrupt and they're negative people.
Are there any queer characters apart from the protagonist who aren't villains?
Jamal
is not really a villain.
Well, he's this protagonist.
Michael wasn't.
What's his name? The guy who's in Jessica Jones. What is his name in Empire? Ryan, I think. So those men, they're gay men and they're not villains. But again, as I say, they're like very.
Tiana?
Tiana?
She's not a villain.
She's not a villain, she's boring.
She's not a real character.
But they're not. Okay, so if you look at the older people, the scholars who hate the L Word would criticize those characters on the same basis that they are not queer looking, like they're queer in their sexuality in practice, but they don't threaten gender norms. They look traditional in their gender expression, right? So they don't. There's one character in Empire, you've seen her, or like she's gender fluid.
She's in Hakim's
chicken, I think.
Yeah, entourage.
Chicken. Yeah.
She's like his assistant, kind of.
Yeah.
She has the hair.
Yeah. Definitely. And the actor is gender fluid as well, and like, so, but they don't use this character very much. It's like there is this token kind of like sitting there, does not say a word. Like it's so with Empire, it's like this confusing. Sometimes they do something very
they're trying
progressive,
but
every now and then you have this thing where it's like Tiana for me is an example. It's like a, there's no, it's like a failure of like, and the, Tiana's was. They used like her girlfriend storyline. For me, it was like a sexualized, like no, there was no, the girlfriend had no, there was no narrative value to it. There was no, they didn't explore it, and they just made her disappear. And they used it just through Hakim. Like it was not done very well. And so every now and then they have those.
See, to me, that sounds like it's a limitation of the melodramatic form.
Mm.
Because the melodrama determines that you must have a set of core characters that you follow, and everyone else is disposable and or peripheral. So, it's, I don't even...
Stereotype.
How do you compare the number of straight villains?
In Empire.
Because I think you'd probably be coming out...
I don't know, I didn't read those queer women as like...
villain?
Evilly queer? I didn't think like...
Exactly.
Their queerness. I don't read their evilness as coming from their queerness. You know
no, it wasn't from that, but it was like...
It was linked, you said.
Yeah.
I think definitely with Camilla. Like, she is definitely portrayed as, like, really weird sexually. Like, child relationship.
Well, she's even... She's sexual abuse. But Camilla is interesting because it's like... Camilla, for me, is like the faux lesbian. Like, she's not... I don't think Camilla is a lesbian or bi character. I think she's totally straight.
She's a straight woman who's house of cards.
Like, no, he's more queer than her.
He's more queer.
Yeah,
but, like,
he,
they
he,
use sex as a tool more than a form of expression. And,
do you think
and
Francis,
their power
is
more important to them
not
than their sexuality.
Oh.
Yeah.
See, I think... I thought he's sexual, like... His gay sexual, like the gay part of his sexuality for me was really, I read it as very genuine. Like,
he always put it aside in favour of his power conquests.
Right.
Like, he would never be a gay man because he wouldn't be able to be as powerful and go for president.
But that's a genuine
in
sexuality.
In his expression of his identity, he would never be a gay man.
But she does the opposite. Camilla is like, I'm marrying a woman. Yet, like, they never say, you never see it then any
funny.
Sexuality.
That's
and
yeah,
she
that's
says she's
yeah.
never
seen
it.
That's right.
And then
that's why they're all the beautiful. They're like, hello, darling. We don't like 10
years away. It's like desexualization.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in Empire is not so bad with Jamal and Michael. They were very sexualized. So I thought that was really
good. But that's only when they're domestic queers.
Domestic, yeah.
But when they're in their own.
Yeah, domestic.
Okay.
Yeah.
The
so
there's still
rules about
still,
how you can
we're still in the era
yeah.
of the cuddly queer. Like,
I don't think with Jamal and Michael, like, they were, like, fooling around naked under the covers, and the cookie comes in, and it's, like, it's, you know, obviously...
I mean, it's
and,
on network television.
Yeah.
There's
so
only so much you can show.
Exactly,
but
I think they're not desexualized. They're not that... They're not only domestic. Michael.
But Michael performed, like, feminine labor. He was
yeah.
the cook.
Yeah, well, that's
he,
the
like,
other...
He
yeah.
was the lady.
No, they're definitely domestic,
really?
But they're
yeah.
sexual. Yeah, no, Michael, and not only that, but there was, like... And Cookie makes all those, like, racist comments as well, like, calling, like, feminine pronouns, and then also calling... She called him La Cucaracha.
Because he's Latino,
yeah. He's got Latino, and he's like, ask her to cook for you and to be your maid. Like, it was just
wow.
so... But it's so offensive that it's, like, it's just, what?
Yeah.
How can you be that offensive?
And they do the same with, Cookie's Latino lover in season
yeah.
2.
Yeah. So that's the yeah the Hispanic characters are also very interesting in contrast because but like there was a scene where Chase actually gives oral sex to Michael like in public. Like, I mean it's they are sexualized compared to Modern Family or Ellen
yeah.
like that where it's like cuddly. I don't think they're cuddly. I think and Ryan as well. Ryan and Jamal have like these makeup sessions where you're like this is you wouldn't have seen that. 10 years ago.
That's
it's
right. It's progress and it's patchy and it's
exactly
and that's
exactly.
how progress happens.
I feel
it's
like
not
it's
even
Empire
process.
Is like that
yeah,
at all.
Yeah.
Completely like that because it's, yeah.